There's a spirit in our neighborhood, a sort of understanding that pervades the streets where I live. It's this kind of mutual sensibility that works. It's a way of relating between us neighbors. And for us, it works. It works. For instance, when one of us leaves town, well, all the others sort of watch the mailbox, right? We take turns and we be sure that the deck out in the front porch, that there's a way to check on that or pay attention to the cars out front. We kind of keep an eye out. Do you have a spirit like that where you live? Last year, the old red Honda parked out in front of our house was stolen. And, well, our neighbors felt guilty, as if, you know, they should have done something about that. We were actually glad. In fact, we were waiting for the check from the insurance man when the police called and said they found it. And oh. Well, about 3 weeks ago, there was a knock on the door, and it was my neighbor. I answered, and he looked at me, and he said, "Have you heard the news? It's bad." There was an expression on his face, and I couldn't tell if it was fear or anger or somehow urgency. "They let him out," he said. Well, it took me a second to figure out what he was talking about. It was our local heroin addict. There's a guy in our neighborhood who stays with members of the extended family, and he's just up the hill from us. And I don't know, we're not sure, but it seems like he scores his drugs from another place in our little neighborhood. Some months ago, he'd broken into a house and he'd stolen stuff, I suppose, that he could trade to get more drugs. And Everett's finest showed up and they arrested him. And so, what did all of us do? We all relaxed. It was palpable. You could feel the change in the spirit of our neighborhood. Before that, however, before they locked him up, you could feel the tension. You could feel the kind of the angst in the air. People were aware, people were wary. But I sort of smile about it now because it almost got to be as if it was, I don't know, handy to blame this guy. Every time a dog pooped in your yard, oh, must be the heroin guy. Every time that the mail went missing from the box, oh, it must be the heroin guy. Every time there was a pop can in the gutter or somebody turned on their leaf blower a little too early in the morning, heroin guy. It became convenient. Convenient to put all of our angst onto this man. I mean, you know, we knew better, right? We knew better, but it felt like our little neighborhood would be perfect again if we could just rid ourselves of this man. How easily we could demonize him, that we could locate on him the problem, that he was the trouble, that he was the source of everything wrong. And as long as he was removed from us, as long as he was held on the outside, as long as he was kept remote at a safe distance, well, then we had our calm. We had our equilibrium again. But now that he's back out again, it's changed. Tony bought a new security alarm. Dawn across the street's got new motion detector lights. Bebe, a couple doors up, well, she's getting a new dog. Addiction is never about one person, is it? Possession and distress and mental illness is never about one person, is it? Like overlapping circles, it touches all of us, all affected by the disease, all touched by the trouble. Luke's gospel is fascinating. It's like this sort of travelogue almost. Luke writes that when Jesus arrived at the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee, a little detail he doesn't want us to miss, right? As he stepped out on land, a man from the city who had demons met him. As he stepped out on the land, I do have this impression that Jesus hardly has his leg over the gunwale with a sandal on the beach before, pow, there he is, nose to nose with this diabolical one. It's fascinating to see how there's other details there. Luke goes on to talk about how the demons pleads with Jesus not to torment him, as if the spirit seems to realize just exactly who he's up against, this new Son of God. And then Luke goes on to say that Jesus demands that the spirit identify itself. And what does it call its name? Legion. It's a numeric reference, but even more, it's a political one, right? Because who had legions? Rome. You can see Jesus has his thumb in Caesar's eye, right? But Luke doesn't stop there either. This spirit, this legion, screams and pleads not to go back to the abyss. And I don't know, is it a kind of mercy that Jesus allows for the spirits to go into what? Into the animals? What kind? Schwein. They are, after all, in the city of the Gerasenes. There are some scholarship to suggest that they actually had the boar's head, would have been the emblem of their town. That was their way in the world. That was the economy. That's how it all worked. But then Luke goes on to describe even more, that once the spirits have gone into the pigs, what do the pigs do? They run. They run down the hill into the water and are drowned. Would Luke's audience have understood that reference too? Remember Pharaoh? The armies went into the sea and were drowned. Who's in charge here anyway? What catches me this time, however, though, is something that I'd not considered before. And maybe it's because of the circumstances in which I find myself. Maybe it's because of what I've seen and watched in my culture, in my community, on my TV screen, as I've seen things. Because Luke goes on to say that when the swineherd saw what had happened, they ran off and told it in the city and country. Then people came out to see what had happened, and they came to Jesus. They found a man from whom the demons had gone, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And then what's the next line? They were afraid. Jesus does this good thing. Jesus does this beautiful thing. But instead of a community that rejoices and give thanks to God, they become a group thrown into a kind of a tizzy, a great fear, Luke says. The equilibrium of their system is destroyed. Everyone had become comfortable with the way things were. They kind of liked having this crazy guy, this guy that would live up among the tombs. It worked. They were able to blame him for stuff, able to make him the focus of their problems, make him the scapegoat or the scape swine. They could load up all of their dysfunction, all of their fears onto this wild man. Lousy pork prices? Oh, must be the demon guy. Crummy weather? Oh, demon guy. Stuff missing from our house? Demon guy. Do you see how it works? Maybe it's always that way, that healing and restoration and transformation is never about just one person. We're all touched by the glory. It's never just about one person. We all bear the consequences of demon possession and yet also of exorcism. We all live with those realities of darkness in our culture, in our world. It's never about just one person. The man from whom the demons had gone begged that he might be with him. But Jesus sent him away saying what? Two things. Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you. Two things. Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you. Terrorism's twisted purpose is to make us afraid, right? That's how it works. That's how it's intended. Terrorism's twisted purpose is always to make it seem as if there is nothing we can do, that we are powerless in the face of it. This man, this one in the text, now healed and liberated, wants to ditch his community and tag along with the disciples, but Jesus instead says, no, right? Two things. Return to your home and declare. Return to your home and declare how much God has done. In short, stay put and testify to God's work and purpose. Don't go anywhere. Stand your ground and practice the gospel. Duh. I have a demon, and you have a demon. We all have a demon. It is a spirit that would like for us to believe that it all must be somebody's fault. I have a demon, and you have a demon. We all have a demon. It is a spirit that would like us all to believe that if we could just get the bad guys, we could make it right again. We could go back to normal. Our spirit, our demon, is not named Legion, but it might be named Xenophobia. It's probably named my favorite demon, self-righteousness. Jesus is the tormentor of such demons, and Jesus will not quit until all of them are exorcised from our lives. Jesus is with us now to torment and to challenge. Jesus is with us now to interrupt and to push us to new faith and courage, to new love. We have work to do, right? Two things, two actions, two charges, two verbs, remember? Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you. Go home. Stand your ground and practice the gospel. Amen.